Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. Well, it's Wednesday, and that means it's time for our weekly house call with Dr. Lena Lee, the Medical Officer of Health for the Leeds Granville and Lanark District Health Unit. Doctor, good to see you again.
Always good to be here.
And also joining us today, we've got Public Health Nurse Erin McLean, who is here. Erin, welcome back to In Focus.
Bob, nice to be here.
We are going to be talking about National Immunization Week. This is National Immunization Week. So maybe, Dr. Lee, you can start us off by telling us what this year's theme is and what does it mean for us?
Yeah, so this year's theme is Catch Up with Confidence. And over the past few years, I think we've missed out on a lot of things. As a world, as a region, and you know, we've missed out, I think, on seeing people that we would have liked to see on some occasions, missed out on some activities that we would have wanted to do, and that was really important over the course of COVID-19. One of the things that I think a lot of people experienced was that they actually missed the usual vaccination times that they would have taken to get up to date with their vaccines. So I'm not talking about COVID-19 vaccines. I'm talking about all those other vaccines. So we have different seasons of our lives that are accompanied by different vaccines. And so I think a lot of people have missed out on being up to date. And so catching up really is the theme of this year. And I think, you know, I've talked about this on this show before, about how some people are not totally up to date with their vaccines. And the fact that this is a National Immunization Week theme, I think just goes to show how it's not just our region, but certainly all across Canada and even globally, there's been a need to catch up.
And really, it makes sense that people have fallen behind. We fell behind on everything, you know, over the course of the pandemic. It was just something, you know, that got included in the long list of things that we now need to take care of. You know, things like renewing your driver's license and your health card and all that. So there's a lot of people doing that right now. Vaccines, obviously, would be very important on that list. So maybe you can elaborate a little bit for us on why not being up to date on vaccines is such a concern.
Yeah, so vaccination really is one of the most important things that we do in public health and to prevent each other or prevent spreading illness to each other. I think you know, the history of public health really is hand in hand with the history of vaccination, and over the, you know, since we've had vaccines for decades now, we've had such an effective tool to prevent illness and really save lives. There was a time not that long ago, there are still people who remember childhood polio and how devastating it could be. And that's a vaccine that has essentially eradicated polio for much of the world, including here. And so there's a lot of vaccines where we need a certain level of protection across the population in order to prevent transmission to people locally. And so, for example, measles, you really need over 90% protection in order to have that population level protection, et cetera, right? So we are seeing all across the world, like I mentioned before, there is a lower rate of vaccination for a lot of these vaccines now. And we are at the same time, as a consequence, seeing a rise in transmission of these vaccine-preventable diseases all around the world, and some of them locally in Ontario as well, though we fortunately haven't had any locally in LGL yet. But for example, whooping cough, we're seeing in Ontario, we're seeing a growing rate across the world. Measles, certainly we're seeing as well as polio, and many others that are vaccine-preventable. And so we're doing our part locally to make sure that we don't have a recurrence of these illnesses here in the LGL region as well.
Okay, Aaron, we'll bring you in on the conversation now. Maybe you can tell us some of the vaccines that are needed for the different stages of a person's life. And why don't we start with pregnant mothers?
Sure, that sounds like a great spot to start. Previously, I don't think there was a lot of focus on immunizing pregnant moms. It was more checking on to make sure they did have adequate protection against measles. But in the last few years, the evidence has come out that it's adults that are transmitting whooping cough to small children and babies. So the Society of Gynecologists and Obstetricians have come out with a recommendation that each pregnancy, a mom does get revaccinated for whooping cough. And it's done in combination with the tetanus diphtheria vaccine. So it's just one more way we're trying to protect the most vulnerable, is pregnant moms are vulnerable, but so are their newborns, because they can't be immunized for the first 2 months.
What about infants and toddlers? This is something that I have some recent firsthand experience with.
So infants and toddlers, there is, Ontario has a routine immunization schedule. And most people are familiar, they're usually spaced out at 2, 4, 6 months. And based on availability of effective vaccines and potential for disease, the province determines which vaccines should be made available. When they say they're eligible, it means they're free. They're provided to everyone for free. Some parents are a little worried because they're saying, well, during COVID, I couldn't get to my doctor's office and they're behind. They didn't get their 4 months. What do I do? We have catch-up schedules. Parents don't have to figure that out for themselves. We sit down with them, or their family practitioner sit down with them and says, okay, these are the steps we're going to do to get you caught up again. So what you've missed it, let's work on getting caught up.
It was really interesting over the course of the pandemic. I couldn't get in to see my nurse practitioner, but they couldn't wait to get my grandson in, that's for sure. And that was the only time that I was really in the building. And they're so good when they give these vaccines as well. And I know the same goes with the people with the health unit when he got his COVID-19 first dose. Like, same thing. Like, the people, if there's any sort of concerns about how your child's going to react, I mean, these are pros. These are people who are going to be so caring with your child and really make it a good experience for, well, as good as an experience can be when someone's jabbing you with a needle. So nonetheless, that's just my 2 cents I wanted to throw in there. Now,
well, I appreciate that, because you're right. Sometimes the fear of getting vaccinated is what stops people. And there are pain strategies that we can work with parents. And a very simple one is breastfeeding during an immunization. And beyond that, we can work with parents to make it a positive experience, even if the parent has previously had bad experiences.
It's really interesting, because the last one that he did at the nurse practitioner, he, like, you know, I hold him on my lap and he crosses his arms and so on. And he literally just watched the lady put the needle in. He did not react whatsoever. He just wanted to get down and start playing again. So, I mean, good on him, I guess. I don't react that well when you know, I really don't. So I guess I could take a lesson from him. Before I ask you to weigh in on this too, Dr. Lee, because I know this is a topic that you can certainly comment on. Aaron, there are immunizations that children need before they go to school or daycare, correct? And that is not too far away for a lot of people going to school for the first time.
Well, exactly. So there is legislation in place that vaccines are mandatory. And it's for exactly the reasons that Dr. Lena was talking about, is we need a certain level of coverage to protect those who can't be immunized for whatever reason. So prior to attending daycare, prior to attending school, parents are required to provide proof that their child is immunized against what they call designated diseases. And they are the ones you would expect, like tetanus, diphtheria, polio, whooping cough, measles. Those are the keen ones. And now chickenpox is on that list as well. So we have different means to get parents to be able to submit them easily online, or even drop them off at our offices. And we have a provincial system where we keep track of. So even if your child changes school, it's okay. It's a provincial system. We still have the record. We just need you to keep us up to date.
Makes sense. Dr. Lee, I'd love to have your thoughts on that topic too, please.
Yeah, so in general, I would say one of the key things that we do as a health unit is try as best we can to keep track of who's received vaccinations, especially young children. Like Aaron was saying, there is a requirement for going into school. And then the other element is for kids where there are no records or they're not up to date for their vaccination, if there is an outbreak or cases of certain diseases, then we would exclude certain children from school if they're not up to date for their vaccination. And unfortunately, that includes kids who may not be able to receive certain vaccines either because they're allergic, for example, to one of the components, or because of an underlying health issue. And we do try to avoid that as much as possible. Sometimes it is up to chance, right? So, for example, measles is much more prevalent in certain areas of the world, and where we've had measles cases, or I shouldn't say locally, in Ontario, they've been imported due to travel. And so it is up to chance a little bit where they get imported in Ontario, but oftentimes the people who get measles are relatively young, which means they're going to school, they're going to daycare, etc. And so then they expose people in their class without realizing, and that's where we do a lot of that outbreak management, prevention, vaccination, all of that.
Aaron, maybe you can tell us a little bit too about some of the older kids, because it's not just the young kids when it comes to school that you have to make sure that their vaccines are up to date. So we're looking at children, I think the year is grade 7, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yes, and I think we might have talked about this once before a few months ago that we were starting with the grade 7 catch up. So we have been working on catching up all those students in grade 9 to 12, but now we are in with the 7-8s. So the usual target group we have to get their meningococcal vaccine, which is a different one than they get when they're infants, hepatitis B, HPV, and for those kids who are over 14, their next tetanus booster. So we have been running a huge catch-up campaign on these in all of the schools in our area. There's been written consents that have gone home to parents because we can't immunize in the school without a written consent form. But we also offer catch-up in our health unit clinics for all of these. We know there are students who are getting ready to go off to post-secondary, and usually to go into residence, you need proof of immunization against many of these things as well. So we know parents are going to be looking for records. They're going, oh my, they're not caught up. So we do our best to help them with, we have an online access to immunization records where they can look it up themselves and print off proof. Or if they're not sure, come in, we'll assess, we'll update, and we'll get them on their way. We just don't want to see everybody in August. We'd like to
Absolutely.
spread it out a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what about youth who are going to post-secondary schools or into the workforce?
Post-secondary, it depends on the program they're going into. So if you're going into a health sciences, they probably would like to see you have your full hepatitis B series. So if you did get behind because of COVID, we want to get you caught up before you head off to school. Because remember that lovely fun word called eligible. Eligible means free. If you don't get it while you're still in that eligible age group, then you do have to pay for it out of pocket. And we don't want to see anybody go through that either. So it depends on generally the program they're heading into. There may be specific vaccines are recommended for their protection. But in general, they are looking for the ones that are provided in grade 7 and that up-to-date tetanus booster after age 14.
Dr. Lee, you're nodding your head quite a bit as Aaron speaks there.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where practicality comes up. We're really trying to push in schools even up to for kids up to grade 12. Right now we're going to schools and or we have been going to schools to offer vaccination so that kids are up to date so that they can get that coverage for free. HPV is another good example where they can get that coverage and that vaccine for free. And then once they leave school and are no longer enrolled in a secondary school program or grade 7 or up, then they actually have to pay out for those vaccines out of pocket. And so, it's not to say say that you're not able to get the vaccines anymore. You're certainly able to. And the recommendation remains that people get those vaccines. But if you want to get it for free, then you really need to do that while you're still in school.
Okay. And we've talked about school. We've talked about, you know, just leaving school. But again, you know, even though I don't like needles, there are some that I should be getting at this age in life as well. And all adults and seniors, they're not off this list. They're people who also need to make sure that their vaccinations are up to date. So, Aaron, maybe you can tell us about those.
So, for the average adult population, we're looking at a tetanus booster every 10 years. And we've already talked about sort of those exceptions with pregnancy. You want to make sure a whooping cough is included in it. Sometimes with travel recommendations, they might want you to have an additional dose of polio. But once again, that gets assessed by your healthcare provider. As you get a little older, then there's some others that become available. And once again, it's because the risk and the impact is a lot more significant. So we always recommend everyone get an annual flu shot in the fall. Babies, adults, children, seniors. It's not always for your health, but it's protecting others because you could be that spreader without being ill yourself. Once you're 65, there is a pneumococcal vaccine that is for that older age group. Shingles is a vaccine that is available once you're in your 50s. However, it's not, that eligible word again, free until you're 65. Now, it's another one that the government acknowledged people couldn't get out to the healthcare provider to get it. So they extended the eligibility deadline. It used to be 65 to 70. I think it's up to 72 right now. You can get it for free because they knew there were restrictions during COVID and not everybody could get out and get their two doses. And ever present is COVID. They've recently come out with just the spring booster guidelines, and they're only recommending for that more vulnerable 65 plus population and those in long-term care. But we suspect it'll be an annual flu thing, similar to flu, sorry. In the fall, get your COVID booster, get your flu shot, that way you have protection through the winter and you're protecting those around you.
Yeah, and we know that even Dr. Lee and I have talked about this in the past too, even though it isn't necessarily seasonal, it's sort of, positional, if you will. And when we move inside, it can pass from person to person a lot easier than in the summer months when we're as far away from people as we can get being outside in that. So, so yeah, it makes sense to have it in the fall when we have those limitations. Before I get back to you, Dr. Lee, if you could just tell us, Aaron, how can people get more information or even make an appointment at a clinic?
So we do have a link on our main front page right now for Immunization Week, covering a lot of the points that Lena and I talked about today. We still have our online, it's a phone number you would call to book an appointment at the health unit. If you can't get into your healthcare provider for whatever reason, we do have a phone number, and you would think I'd have that right up and handy on the website in front of me, wouldn't you? It's a 1-800 number, and one moment, I will give it.
You mean the health unit's number there, the 1-844-369-1234?
You've got it. I just found it at the same time. So at the moment, our other immunizations, so non-COVID, we don't have an online booking system. And I know people like to book online. They like to choose their own appointment. We're working towards getting an online booking system for our other clinics. We don't have one yet. So you call that line, you talk to one of our lovely call center staff, and they're so nice and they're so friendly, and they will call you back if you get the answering machine and help book you into one of our office clinics. And we have weekly clinics in Elmont, Kemple, Smiths Falls, Brockville, and Gananoque. We are looking as well at possibly holding some evening clinics because we know parents can't always get away during the day. So if the demand is there, we will reschedule our clinics and do evenings. Just ask and we will see what we can do.
Excellent. You're always very accommodating. I appreciate your time today, Aaron. Great information. And Dr. Lee, before we go, I know that one of the things that you encourage most often is education. And when you have people who are opposed to vaccinations and so on, one of the things that you always tell those people is to please get educated. Go to those reliable resources and find out?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a few resources that I trust and would ask people to go to. Certainly the first, and this is where the evidence is people really rely on their primary care provider, their family doc or their nurse practitioner to give them accurate information and information that they can trust. And so if people have questions, even if you're saying, you know, I'm just not sure, I'm feeling a little bit uncomfortable, I read something or I saw something, somebody told me about side effects or whatever the case may be, if you have some questions, there's very strong evidence that talking to your primary care provider is really helpful in getting information that you need. Certainly, if you're looking for information online, at the Health Unit, we do have information about vaccinations. Sometimes that information is relatively broad. We may not break down all the different, for example, side effects or all the different questions that people have. Where people have more specific questions, I would encourage them to go to reputable sources. One of them is NACI, which is the National Advisory Council on Immunization. It is a national Canadian group that provides evidence on vaccination. It talks about recommendations. It talks about pros and cons. It can be a little bit technical, so be forewarned on that. Health Canada also does have information about vaccination, and the CDC out of the US has information about vaccination as well. Those are resources that I trust and I would recommend people go to. The last piece is for all vaccinations. For childhood-based vaccinations, going to either the SickKids website out of Toronto, they have quite a bit of information about vaccination, or in Ottawa or in London as well, the children's hospitals also have information about vaccination and will link you to websites that they also trust. And so those are a network of reliable information. And then the last I'll say is if there's information that people are still unsure about, they have questions, you can book an appointment with one of our vaccine clinic nurses to review some of your questions, concerns. If you have, certain things that you want to ask and you're not sure where to go to, there are good resources as well.
Excellent. And so I guess you're saying don't trust Dr. Facebook.
No, Dr. Facebook oftentimes, it's hard to tell sometimes whether the information is true or not based on what you read online. And so those reputable sources are really critical.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you both for being here today. We really appreciate the fact that you folks do this for us every single week. We look forward to speaking again with you, Erin, and of course with you, Dr. Lee.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
I'm Bob Perreault. Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks so much for listening to this edition of In Focus. We'll talk to you next time.